We've all probably noticed that we now live in an age of rage, and it's really easy to find people who are just outraged about something. And I believe that it has always been the case. I think people are we're naturally just easily agitated. And so I think there have always been throughout history just people who just got upset about things. But what has changed now is that we now have these megaphones that we carry around in our pockets called a cell phone and social media. And so what used to be confined to a diner and coffee and just two or three guys and one rolling their eyes at the other is now able to be broadcast literally all over the world for everybody to see and to hear our just outrageous takes and the things that have us upset. And I'll be honest with you, it is great entertainment. I mean, it really, really is. I am so happy some people have cell phones because it just makes my life a whole lot more fun. Because, like, I don't know, have you guys ever seen these? There's actually a book out there where people have collected one-star reviews of our national parks. Maybe you have heard some of these, but these are people who go to the most beautiful places in our nation, and then they decide on Google or Yelp, they're going to leave a review and give it one star, okay? And so, like, here's one for you. Somebody went to Yellowstone National Park, and this is what they wrote. I got stuck in a two-hour traffic jam, all because there were elk off in the distance. I just couldn't believe that these rangers let the elk do this. Lazy government employees. One star, Yellowstone National Park. Here's somebody else. They went to Old Faithful over there at Yellowstone, and this is what they said. Save yourself some money and boil a pot of water at home. One star, right? It's like, this is amazing. But we don't just do it in national parks. We actually do this for restaurants. Restaurants aren't exempt either. And so a lot of people will jump on Yelp and they'll give some reviews. Like, there was one lady named Diana. She was reviewing her local Outback. And this is what she said. She said, I am absolutely livid. Just livid. My husband drove all the way to pick up our Outback order, and you people forgot the bloomin' onion. That was the only thing I wanted. One star. Then she followed it up and said, my fat husband ate the bloomin' onion in the car and lied to me. I'm sorry and don't know how to delete reviews. Five stars, right? I mean, don't you love it? I mean, this is so great. These people have cell phones. This is amazing. Our lives are so much better now. But man, I mean, you guys have probably noticed. So it's just like easy for us to get worked up over things and have a little bit of rage, a little bit of outrage, and just be mad about things. And so as a culture, we've kind of gotten to this place to where we're trying to help people deal with all of their outrage. And so there are things now that are called like rage rooms. I don't know if you've heard of these, but a rage room is where you can go in and you can pay to destroy stuff, throw things around, take a sledgehammer to something, or even rage rituals. To where there are these ceremonies that involve like screaming and hitting sticks and just doing all kinds of things to where it's just like, we just got to get it out. We just got to get out. We got to give vent to our anger. But yet, data from The Ohio State University has found out that these catharsis treatments actually fail. And what they find is that fully venting our anger doesn't actually reduce it, but rather primes us to respond with more aggression the next time that we are provoked. Maybe the Bible is not so ancient, because only a fool gives full vent to their anger, it says. Now, listen, there are some things that we should, you know, they're just going to annoy you. Some of them are small. They're just things that are just going to make you just like annoyed. They're going to give you a little bit of rage and those kind of things. There are some things like that. There are some things, honestly, that are out there worth getting angry about. And just being enraged. I mean, things, I'm talking like, you know, injustice, like real harm, like real evil. Like it should cause a sense of outrage in you to hear that stat that one person dies of hunger every 4 seconds. That should do something inside of you. And what I love about what Romans 12 does here is that it doesn't say, hey, we just want to pretend that all things are equal and that this anger and that equal are the same thing. That's not what it does. But what Paul is doing here is he's giving us some direction as to what do you do whenever you are outraged, whenever there is something, when something has provoked you, or you're experiencing evil in your life, what do you actually do with that? And so we'll be there in just a second, but I want you to just grab that stone that you got whenever you came in. I just want you to hold it in your hand right now, because throughout this entire time that we are together, here's what this is. This stone today represents an offense. This might be a grudge, it might be anger, it might be evil, anything like that. And it's something that you have been holding on to and that you're just keeping a tight grip on. And so what I want you to do throughout this entire message, I think you can do two things at once, is I want you to have a background prayer just kind of running as we go through the next 20 minutes or so together. And it's just this: God, would you show me, is there something that I'm holding on to that you're calling me to release today? God, is there something that I'm holding on to? An offense, some evil, something that, you know, some rage that I'm holding on to that you're going to call me to release today? And so throughout the message, if you need to, you can pick up the rock, remind yourself, you can set it off to the side so you can take your notes. But just remember, that's what this is as we work through this. So remember, we're in Romans chapter 12. And Paul begins this chapter with just these great verses. Therefore, I urge you, brothers and sisters, in view of God's mercy, to offer your bodies as a living sacrifice, holy and pleasing to God. This is your true and proper worship. And then he says, and don't conform to the pattern of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. And remember, so everything that follows, verse 2, is Paul telling us this is what it looks like to offer yourself as a living sacrifice. This is what it looks like whenever we are being transformed and we are being renewed. This is what it all looks like. And he's talked about the relationships we have with one another in the church, the relationships we have with people outside the church. And in today's three verses, he's talking about how it looks whenever we've had something wrong happen to us, whether it's evil, outrage, whatever it is. And this is how we are to have the attitude. This is what our attitude should look like. So this is what he says, verse 17. He says this: so never, everybody say never, never pay back evil with more evil. But do things in such a way that everyone can see that you are honorable. And your notes, I would circle that word never, because that means it is not an option. That there are no exceptions to this rule. Literally, he says, do not repay anyone evil for evil. And so what that means, it doesn't matter what they did, it doesn't matter what they said, it doesn't matter, and none of those things matter. It doesn't matter whether or not they deserve it or not. If you, hear me, if you are a follower of Jesus, if you are a Christian, if that's who you are, I want you to hear me. You are forbidden, we are forbidden from paying back evil with more evil. It's a command. We don't get to do it. That's just it. We are forbidden from giving evil back for evil. Instead, we are to do things in such a way that everyone can see that you are honorable. Really, the way he constructs this sentence is he is telling us we need to think ahead. We need to plan ahead. We need to give careful thought in advance to how we will respond to evil whenever it shows up in our lives. Because here's what Paul is saying. He's not saying you need to learn to be thoughtful in the moment. You need to learn how to wing it whenever evil comes your way. Because if we're honest, if we're just being in the moment and just winging it whenever something bad happens to us, most of us probably don't do the best job. He's saying you've got to have a plan. You got to have a game plan. You got to have a plan of attack even before the offense happens. And so it's a little bit like this. Like on my phone, I've got a workout app that tells me whenever I go into the gym, here's what you need to work out, okay? Because I want to make sure I've got certain goals and doing these things and making sure that because if I'm just going to wing it, I'm just going to go into the gym. It's like, all right, what's empty? I'll just go over there and do that. And you may end up working the same thing out 4 days in a row. It's like, no, you need a plan. Most of us, you know, we've got a plan whenever it comes to our money. What do we call that? A budget. That's all a budget is a game plan for your money so that you are pre-deciding, here's what we're going to do. Here's how much we're going to give. Here's how much we're going to save. Here are the bills we got to pay. All the things that are there. And it's not let's just open up the bank app and see how much money's in the checking account. Great, let's go out. That's not what it is. That's not a plan. Even whenever we're raising our kids, we've got to make some pre-decisions, don't we? We really do. I think about the decisions that our parents who are raising young kids right now in this church, the pre-decisions that you have to make are so many more than what we had to make all those years ago. I mean, you're like pre-deciding now. It's like, well, how much screen time are they going to get? You're pre-deciding now, like, how old are they going to be before they can have a cell phone? You're pre-deciding now, like, when are they going to be able to have social media? Never, right? I mean, you're pre-deciding all of those things right now, because just winging it isn't always a great plan of attack. And Paul says, whenever it comes to being offended and people doing things harmful towards you, you've got to have a game plan before it happens, so you don't just respond in the moment. Let's get practical. Now, I know this would never happen on any of your teams, but let's just pretend that your team group chat that is there, and some parent throws shade at your kid who gave up the home run in the game, or they're throwing shade at your choice of post-game snacks. We're going to pre-decide before the season even begins. Anything like that happens in the group chat, I'm not responding. Like, if I got an issue, I'm going face to face and we'll deal with it and we'll work it out there, but I am not going to do that, okay? Or how about this? You get cut from the team, or you lose your starting position, or at work you get passed over for a promotion, and so you've applied for it and you get passed over. You decide before the job has even been given or who the starters are, you make a decision and you just go, all right, if I don't get this, I am deciding right now, I will not run down the person who does get this just to make me feel better, right? That's a pre-decision. We're doing it beforehand. Or how about this? Your ex says something to your kids that demeans or cuts you down. You pre-decide, even before, that I will never say anything poor about my ex to our kids. I will never run down their mom. I will never run down their dad. No matter what it is they say, I refuse to do that. I am pre-deciding that's what I am going to do. You got a game plan. And look at that. Whenever you have a game plan, what happens? Everyone will see that we are honorable. That's what Paul says. Christian, you need to understand this. In every situation, somebody is watching how you're going to handle it. They're paying attention. And they're paying attention to you because you say that you're a Christian, that you go to this church, or that, you know, you're a follower of Jesus. And people are always watching to see whether or not that changes anything in our lives. Somebody's always watching. And so what that means is that how we respond to offense, how we respond to harm, how we respond to evil, isn't something that is felt. It's seen by those around us. And so that means that your reaction is a reflection on Jesus himself. Paul continues in verse 18. He says, do all that you can to live at peace, live in peace with everyone. Other translations will put it like this: if it is possible, as far as it depends on you, live in peace with everyone. And I would just say that that little phrase, if it is possible, doing an awful lot of work in this verse, isn't it? I mean, it really is, because sometimes it's not possible to live at peace with everyone. It's just not. Like, I want to make sure that right up here at the front that I'm just being clear here. If you're in a relationship where there's abuse or exploitation, it's genuinely unsafe, I want you to understand it is not God's will for you to stay there in the name of peace. That's not what Paul is saying here. You know, in fact, if you're in one of those situations, like, how do you live this out? How do you live out making the effort and the other person just doubles down? And they get more harsh. They get more severe. And I would just say this is more of off to the side, but this would just be the slight counsel would be, we learn to set a boundary. Boundaries are not anti-peacemaking. They can actually be a part of it, because this is not just saying, hey, you just got to sit there and take it. That's not what Paul is saying. What he is saying is do everything you can, not tolerate everything they do. That's not what he's saying. Because there are crazy makers in this world, are there not? There are some crazy makers out there, and it is out there, they exist. They love to stir stuff up. They have no intention of living at peace with anyone, and they refuse. And if they refuse, just know this, the lack of peace isn't on you. That is on them. But while we cannot control their actions, we are 100% in control of ours and our ownership and our initiative. And so that's why he says, make every effort as far as it depends on you. Not on them, on you. It reminds me a lot of what Jesus says in Matthew chapter 5, verse 9. He said, blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called children of God. Blessed are the peacemakers, not the peace lovers. There is a big difference between peace lover and a peacemaker, right? Like, I don't know, I tend more towards peace loving because it's just like, I would love to just overlook things, just call it in the name of peace. But that's not necessarily what Jesus says. Jesus is saying peacemaking, those who are making an effort, who are willing to have the hard conversations, who take ownership where necessary. They make the moves towards peace. And he says knowing, or even knowing that other person may not respond, but still trying to make peace. Blessed are the peacemakers. The way I think of it is this. In fact, in your notes, you've kind of got space here to do this. I think in terms of, I call it the blame pie. And so just draw a big circle there, and it's like a pie chart. And so the way I like to think through any conflict that I'm in or I'm helping somebody work through is like, here's the blame pie. This is everything. Every disagreement, every offense, every frustration that is there. And so we look at that and say, this is the whole problem. This is the whole pie. And then the challenge is for me, whenever I'm in it, is to sit there and say, okay, if this is the whole pie, which slice of the pie is mine? How much of the pie is mine? And if I were to draw a representation of this is my part, how much would I draw? And just like you, I want to draw the smallest slice that I can. It's like, this isn't a Thanksgiving slice that I want to draw. This is like I've had too much dinner and I just want, give me a half a slice of a half a slice kind of slice. And say, oh, that's how much I've got. But here's the thing. Even if it is true that I only own 1% of the pie or even 10% of the pie or whatever percentage it is that I throw on there, guess what? That means that sliver is mine. It's not theirs. And so Paul doesn't say as far as it depends on them. It's as far as it depends on you. And so I have to own that little slice of the pie, no matter how small it is. And so if I own 10% of the problem, that doesn't mean that I wait for them to get to work on the 90% that they own. It's no, I start working on my 10% right now. If I only own 1%, I don't get to skip it because they've got 99% over there. It's I have to do my work. It's do all that I can to live at peace with everyone. And so what Paul is saying is like, we don't just stop at not repaying evil for evil. We actually take active steps to make sure that and to do things to make things right. Verse 19, dear friends, never take revenge. Leave that to the righteous anger of God. For the scriptures say, I will take revenge, I will pay them back. And I love that Paul begins this with dear friends, other translations it might say beloved, because it's right before the hardest command. It's almost like your boss pokes his head in the door and says, how is my favorite salesman doing today, right? How do you react whenever your boss sticks his head and he says something like that? You immediately brace because you're like, nothing good's coming after this, right? And they're about to ask me to do something that I don't want to do. And so you're bracing yourself and just thinking, all right, what's up, all right? And so Paul's not exactly doing that, but there is a little bit of that. They're just going, dear friends, beloved, don't take revenge. And he does that because to do what he's asking us to do, you're going to have to make sure that your identity is rooted in who you really are. And who are you really? You are a friend of God, dearly beloved. You have been saved by grace, bought by mercy. You have been made new. All these kind of things. And so he says, listen, you've got to find that identity. You've got to anchor yourself in that. And so I'm going to tell you this. This is going to be hard, dear friends, beloved. Never take revenge. But leave room for God's righteous anger. Literally, it's his wrath. For I will take revenge. I will pay them back. So what is revenge? I think I would define it like this. It's whenever we want to make the other person pay for what they did. We just want to see it paid back. That's what it is. They did something wrong, and we want them to pay the consequences for it. And there is a little bit of a challenge with this because it gets a little murky. Some of us in the room, we would describe ourselves as high justice kind of people. I don't know if you've got any other high justice people in here. You just like, man, that was wrong. This needs to be dealt with. Somebody needs to pay for what they did. And their high justice personalities standing right up here. And here's the thing. Wanting revenge, here's the danger for us, can feel righteous. but we're actually mistake, and we can actually mistake it for justice. But I do think there is a line between justice and revenge. And here's how I would here. This isn't perfect, but it'll work for us today. Justice is fighting on behalf of someone else. That's what justice is. You saw somebody else wrong, and so you're doing what you can to help them out. Revenge is fighting on behalf of yourself. I'm trying to take matters into my own hands. Somebody did something wrong to me, so I'm going to get them back. That is revenge, okay? And so that's where it kind of, you know, just gets a little bit there to where it's like, it's really easy to think I'm going for justice, but I'm really going after revenge because it's for me. And you can think that you're fighting for the what is right, but you're really just going for revenge. And what Paul says is, it is not your place to take revenge. It's just not your place. And if it's not your place to take revenge, that means you have to trust the Lord that he is actually going to do what he says he's going to do whenever he says, it is mine to avenge and I will repay. Meaning that whenever you and I, whenever we decide that we're going to take revenge, take matters into our own hands, meaning whenever we're daydreaming about what we would love to do to them for what they did to us, or we're trying to eye for an eye or rumor for a rumor or scream for a scream, and we're going through all these things, what God is saying is like, hey, you're sitting in my seat. And he just kind of like, I would really like to have my chair back because this belongs to me. This is my job, and it's his job because he understands what we cannot understand. He sees what we cannot see. He knows the whole story whenever we can't know the whole story. And he says, I need you to trust me that I am good, that I am holy, that I am just, and I need you to trust me that in the end, I will repay every evil and every sin will be paid for. It will happen. And I need you to trust me. And you can be rest assured today that whenever everything is all said and done, every sin against us will be paid for in one of two ways. It'll either be paid for by the blood of Jesus on the cross, or it will be paid for by that person in hell. It will be paid for. It is going to happen. Now, our heart is that no one would experience the horrors of hell. That everyone, our enemies, everyone, that they would receive the grace, that they would receive forgiveness, that they would have their sins paid for on the cross so that they can be forgiven. That is our heart. And God just says, trust me. It's in my hands, not in yours. So you've been holding this rock. And you've been asking God, is there anything? So I want you to grab the rock again. I want you to just put it in your hand again. And maybe over the past 20 minutes, God has brought a name to mind. Maybe it's more than one name. Maybe there's multiple names. Whatever it is, maybe he's brought an offense to mind. Maybe he's just brought something that you've been carrying on your own or whatever it is. And what I want you to know before we close out this morning is you don't have to carry the responsibility of making them pay for what they did to you. And I'm not here to tell you that what they did wasn't wrong. I'm not here to tell you that they don't deserve consequences. I'm not here to even tell you, hey, someday they may apologize to you, because I can't guarantee any of those kind of things. What I can tell you is that vengeance belongs to the Lord. That's who it belongs to, not to you, not to me. It belongs to him. And so here in a moment, here's what we're going to do. We're going to pray, and then we'll close out with a song. But what I want you to do as we sing this next song together is, maybe whenever you came in you saw it, there are metal bins at those doors and up over here to the front. And as we sing this song together, I want to invite you to just come and symbolically release what you've been holding. And I want you to drop it in that bucket and just say, God, I refuse to hold on to this anymore. This belongs to you. It does not belong to me. And let's release the offense. Release the desire for revenge. Release it all and say, God, I trust you. Now, there are some of you sitting in the room and you're sitting going, Adam, 20 minutes is not long enough. I'm not ready. And if that is you, then let me just talk straight to you for just a second, okay? What I want you to do is then I want you to take this rock home. And I want you to know that you're going to take home a negative sermon illustration today. Because I want you to look at this rock today and tomorrow and next week, next month, Lord help us, hopefully not next year. And I want you to just say it out loud to yourself, I am choosing to continue to carry this on my own. Because God, I don't trust you with this right now. And I want to. I'm just not there yet. And then I hope and I pray that as you see this over the days and the weeks to come, that there will come a moment where you're going to finally be ready to walk over to a trash can in your house and just release it and say, God, I do. I trust you. But for the rest of us during this song, let's make that declaration now. God, I trust you. I release this because here's your bottom line. I'm not going to let my enemy choose who I become. I just refuse. I will not let my enemy choose who I am going to become. And I don't want to become somebody who is just captured by the root of bitterness. I want to live as a free, dearly beloved child of God. I release this today. So let's stand together. And we're going to put a prayer on the screen that another pastor, John Bevere, he wrote. And I want us to just pray this prayer out loud together. So let's pray this. Father, I acknowledge my inability to forgive them apart from you. So therefore, from my heart, I choose to forgive them. And I bring them under the blood of Jesus, all the wrong that they have done to me. And they no longer owe me anything. I remit their sins against me, and I ask that you bless them and lead them into a closer relationship with you and Jesus. That is our heart. That is our prayer. And we ask God that as we release the offense today, that you would just wash us over with your grace and remind us we are not without sin. And so we drop our rocks today. And we pray this in your name.